We are on page 740, Perek Gimel, Pasuk Chof Zayin. Okay, last time. Not forever. Okay, last time we were learning that we discussed one of the last things we discussed is the three sons of Levi, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. We discussed Levi means, like the Rambam says, anybody that wants to become the service of Hashem can be Levi, because Levi means Hapam Yilav Ishi, connected. And then to do that, you have the need first to have Gershon, to divorce yourself from the world. Kohath is to gather sparks of Kedusha Seitev. And then you need what's called Merari, which is the concept of Merirus, meaning embitterment, and the intent of growing more and more. And then the last thing we learned inside the Psukim was Gershon's role was the oil, the covering, the nets, and all that. Okay, then it says like this, in Pasuk Chof Zayin, page 740. Again, this is basically the names of the Levim and their jobs. For the children of Kohath, the family of Amrari, Mishpachas Yitzari, Mishpachas Chavreini, Mishpachas Yizeeli, these are the families of Kohath. B'mispar Kozochim Menchaydish V'mayla, the amount of the males over a month old, Shmeina Salafim V'sheish Meis, 8,600, Shemrei Mishmeres HaKedesh. They were the ones that watched the holy things. The Pasuk is going to say in a second exactly what their job was. Mishpachos b'nei Kohath yachnu al yerech ha-mishkan teimana. Where did Kohath stand? At the camp on the south side. Okay, and that's where Rashi says, on the south side of the Mishkan, remember we learned like this, the tribes camped around the Mishkan, and then the three families of the Levim camped inside also around the Mishkan, and Moshe Aaron and the children were on one side also. Now, on the southern part was the tribe of Reuven, Dago Machne Reuven. So, if you have the Mishkan in the middle, right south of them was the family of Kohath, and right south of them was the Degel of Reuven. Okay? So Rashi uses the famous expression that everybody knows, Oy le Rasha, Oy le Shcheinai. Woe is the wicked, woe is the neighbors. Because Kohath was the grandfather of Korach. Right? Vayikach Korach, Ben Yitzhar, Ben Kohath. So Kohath was Korach's grandfather. When he fought against Moshe Rabbeinu, the Pasuk says, who did he gather? The tribe of Reuven. Together went to fight Moshe Rabbeinu. So Kohath and Reuven were neighbors. So that's why Russia, the good people stay together, the bad people stay together. So this is Kohath's family stayed. Moshe Rabbeinu was on the side where Yehuda was. So that was Tevel Latzadik V'Tevel Shcheini. And this is Eile Rasha Eile Shcheini. Because the 250 people, Dosen Vaviram, okay, as the Pasuk says later on in Parshas Korach, Dosen Vaviram were also descendants of Reuven. The troublemakers, Dosen Vaviram, that from the time they were Jews were still in Mitzrayim, you know, they left over the man and they told Snitch Tameshe Rabbeinu that he killed the Egyptian, and they were fighting with each other. So they were, as the Pasuk says, at the beginning of Korach, V'dasim v'avirim b'nei Aliyav, v'ein ben Peles b'nei Reuven. So they gathered the Reuvenites because they were their neighbors. By the way, just for the record, it's funny, it's an open Pasuk, a chumash, a lot of people don't know that. Dasim and Aviram were brothers. Okay, the Pasuk says, Dasan va'aviram b'nei Aliyav. Okay, they were mamish brothers. Everybody thought they were two separate people. They're actually brothers. Huh? That's what the Pasuk says. Huh? No, they were both Rishayim. They were together. They were the gang.
The Blues Brothers.
Huh?
The Blue Brothers. They were on the south side.
The south side.
So that's why always every country everywhere you go, the north side is the better side, south side is the better.
No.
Downtown like downtown.
No, he meets somebody around Mustama. The Esfans and the Tehrans and the Shiruz, whatever they call it.
But the
Gemara, there's a passage that says Mitzafim Tipasa Chara, because Bavel was north of Israel, so Mitzafim Tipasa Chara. The passage refers to the concept of Bavel caused a lot of problems for the Jewish people. Okay. I mean, Rome is also, Edom is also north of Israel, but the passage is referring to Bavel. But in Midrashim, it's brought down that the concept of north, like the Gemara says, Ruach Tzfeinis Einem Misavevis. Meaning, the Gemara says, when Hashem created the world, all sides of the world were finished, except the north, which would basically be the North Pole area, is uncivilized. And the Midrash says, why did Hashem leave one part of the... But he left the north, not the... He could have left the west, the east. Why? Because it says in the Medrash that in case somebody will come and say, big deal, God created the world, I could also do it. And a lot of people think they're God. So Hashem will say to them, okay, you know what? No problem. I left one part of the world unfinished. The northern part of the world. You know what? Go finish it. You'll finish it, you'll be a God too. Now, obviously nobody could, but why did he leave the north? So it's brought down because of the pasuk that Tzofin... It resembles the concept of evil. Why? I don't know. But that's what it says in the pasuk, that Mitzafin Tipasa Chara, it comes in the north. But here they were in the south.
The structure of Israel came from north, too?
Yeah, the sons of Bavel and... Okay. Then it says like this. Unasi Beisav L'mishpachesa Kahasi. Who was the leader of the household of Kahasi? His name was Elitzafin Ben Uziel. Okay? Umishmartam. Now what was their job? You have to understand, Kahas was the prominent family. That was Moshe Rabbeinu's family. Aaron, you know, it was the prominent family. So they carried, the Gershon people carried the coverings of the tent, you know, the curtains and all that. What did they carry? Ha'aron v'ashulchan v'ha'menorah. They carried the ark where the luchas were, the shulchan where the showbread was, the menorah and the mizbechais, because there are two altars, the golden one and the copper one. Uchle HaKadosh and all the holy utensils, Asher Yishar Subahem, that they would serve, because the Mizbeach had its utensils, and the Shulchan had its utensils, besides the actual, V'amosach V'chol HaVeidosei, and its partition, and all the accessories.
So they carried,
and as we'll learn soon, because soon the Pasuk is going to discuss, sure is no good, soon the Pasuk is going to discuss, how they carried it. There's a whole procedure. When the Mishkan started moving, Aaron and his kids came and did one thing, and then these carried... It was a whole procedure. The Pasuk is going to explain clearly exactly what the procedure was. But this is what they carried.
It's strange, they are carrying the holy things. They are not good people, but they carry the holy things also.
Only Kayach was no good, but Kahas was Moshe Rabbeinu's family. They're, you know... Okay, then it goes to the third one. I'm sorry, Nesiyah Levi, who was the head of the whole tribe of Levi. Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen, Kudas, he was in charge of Shemrei Mishmeres HaKodesh. He was in charge of all the jobs that the Levim had to do. You know, Elazar ben Aaron, he was in charge. Don't forget, right now Aaron was alive. Okay, so he wasn't the Kohen Gadol yet. But he was Aaron's older son that was left. So his job was to make sure that all the Levim did their jobs. We're going to learn later, he also had a job. He personally had a job that the Medrash says he had to be unbelievably strong to be able to do the personal job that Elazar himself had. But he was also in charge of everybody else. So in other words, they say, as soon as anything happened... When the movement, you know, they started moving the garden, the Mishkan, he was in charge, making sure, he was the overseer, the foreman, so to speak. But the way Rashi says, the Masach is actually the Pareches. The Pareches that separated the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, between the Holy and the Holy of Holies, that they also carried. Okay, now we go to the third family. The Merari, who was the family of the Merari. Okay, here he brings down, by the way, one interesting thing. Elazar was in charge of who would do what with the Levium and the leader of Kohas. His brother Isamar, he was in charge of the Gershon people and the Merari people. So Aaron's two children were both in charge, but Elazar was number one in charge. The Merari Mishpachas HaMachli, Mishpachas HaMushi, Heimer, Mishpachas Merari. P'kudei and B'mispar Kozachar, what was their amount? B'mchadish V'mayla, Sheishas Alafim and Masayim. 6,200. So cost at 8,600, they had 6,200. When the Sivei Sov, the Mishpachas Merari, who is the head of Merari? Tzuriyo Ben Avichoyel, Al-Yerach HaMishkan Yachanu Tzafayna. They were on the northern side. Okay, they were on the northern side of the Mishkan. For Kudas Mishmeres B'nei Merari, what was the role of the Merari people? Kashi HaMishkan Bricha V'amuda V'andadav. They had the boards of the Mishkan, the poles, the bars, the pillars, the sockets, V'chol Kel of all the utensils, V'chol Avedosei. Okay, we're going to learn later that the way it works is like this. The Nesiim donated 6 wagons for the Mishkan. Okay, because there were 12 tribes, 2 leaders together donated 1 wagon each. I mean, two leaders donated 1 wagon. So there were 6 wagons. Now, Kohos people didn't need to carry any wagons because they carried it by hand. We're soon going to learn. Merari carried the boards, and the Gershon people carried the coverings. So Merari had 4 wagons to carry the boards. The Gershon people, B'nai Gershon, had 2 wagons, and the Kohos was no wagons because they carried everything by hand. So they didn't have any wagons. There was no purpose of the wagons. And in fact, in the Gemara, we'll see, by the time we get to Parshas Nasi, we can probably say it again. But the Gemara makes a whole figuring how they put the boards on the wagons.
2 wagons, like for instance?
No. They lined up wagons on the same side of the street, and they pushed the boards onto one wagon, and then they pushed it from that onto the other wagon. But the Gemara makes a complicated cheshbon, how big how long the boards were, how wide the boards were, and how they're able to fit all the boards and 2 wagons and 4 wagons.
They bridged it, probably.
The Gemara makes a hokum when we see the truth is we're going to see this later, but when it makes a cheshbon how they carried it, but it was very complicated for them carrying it. In fact, there's a famous thing from the Rebbe. The Rebbe asks, you know, they were very wealthy, these Nesiim. They're very, very wealthy. And as you like that expression, Ein Anias B'Mokem Ashiris, the Gemara says, in the place of wealth, there is no poverty. The Gemara says that before they shechted animals in the Mishkan, and especially in the Beis HaMikdash, that in order to make sure the Shechita would be good, so they would give the animals to drink before the Shechita.
Water?
Yeah, Mashkina Behemoth Lefnei HaShechita. It's a Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Mashkina Behemoth Lefnei HaShechita. Before they shechted the animals, they gave the animals to drink water. Why? In case there's something stuck in the throat, you know, you don't know what animals eat. So it would wash it down, that when they shecht, you know, the shechita should come out good. So the Gemara says, they used to give the animals to drink from golden, not gold-plated, from golden utensils. So the Gemara asks, why in the world do the animals need to drink from good? They know the difference. I mean, like, what's the purpose of it? And the Gemara says, Ein anias b'mokem ashiras. In a place of wealth, there is no poverty. In other words, in God's home, everything is first class, even what the animals drink from. So the question is, if they had a lot of money, okay, especially if you, in this week's parasha, Bishalach, but in Bishalach, it says when the man fell, in the Medrash it says, gold and diamonds fell down from heaven together with the man. So beside what they took out of Egypt, The Jews were loaded over the heads. Okay, they had not, you know, there were no CDs, no stocks. I mean, you know, they had an unbelievable amount of money. The Nesi'im were very wealthy. So the question is, they couldn't afford a few more wagons to make life easier. I mean, okay, zigzag. Make it 12 wagons. Give it wagon each. Don't be so cheap. Give the wagons and finish. And they could have done it. Why didn't they do it? And why is the Torah emphasizing that they only gave six and two leaders together bought a wagon, or donated a wagon? So the Rebbe says, because the Torah wants to teach us a lesson. If six is enough, you don't need more. In other words, utilize, and this is an unbelievable lesson in life, utilize everything to the fullest. If six could be used to the fullest, and it's going to be enough, then you don't need seven. And that's what the Torah is teaching us. Whatever you use, whether it's our brain, our hearts, our hands, doesn't matter, objects that we own, what we need is to utilize everything to the fullest extent, and not to waste anything. Because if six wagons are enough, and you're going to get a seventh, that means the seventh was wasted. The seventh could be used for something else. So I'm saying, just coming back to the point here, B'nai Merari, they carried the boards of the Mishkan. It was, you know, they were solid wood, 15 feet tall, okay, an arm and a half wide, so it's like 3 feet wide. I mean, they weighed a ton, and they had to carry it and push it, and so they were given the wagon, but that was the job of Merari.
Yeah, also, the pin that using for Mishkan also was a gold?
No.
No?
No, they were copper, silver, I'm sorry. The Adonim were silver.
These wagons they brought from Egypt?
Yeah, I guess so. They didn't get into that.
Make it there.
No. No. Okay, and also, Vamudei HaChotzer and the pillars of the courtyard, Vadneim and the everything around them, the sockets, V'Seidesim, Mitzrayim, the pegs and the ropes, these are all things used for the actual structure of the Mishkan. Okay, so therefore, like this, Gershon, the Mishkan basically had three parts, the appliances of the Kelim of the Mishkan, the boards of the Mishkan, and the covering of the Mishkan. So the coverings Gershon took, the boards Merari took, and the actual Aron Shulchan, those things out the Bnei Kos took. V'cheinim lifnei HaMishkan Kedma, who lived encamped in the front of the Mishkan on the east, the Fnei Oil Maid, in front of the Oil Maid, Meisha Aron Ubanov, Meisha Aron and his children, who were Shemrei Mishmeres HaKedesh, the guardians of the ones in charge of the Mishkan, the Mishmeres Bnei Yisrael, for the charge and the job of the watching of the Jewish people, Bazara Korib Yumas, and anyone who was not from these tribes that came close to do the jobs would die. And again, Rashi says over here also the opposite of what we said before. Who was on the eastern side? Moshe, Aaron and his children, and the camp of Yehuda. So that's like Rashi uses the expression, Tev Latzadik, Tev Lashcheinei. Rashi quotes in the Gemara in Sukkah, it's good for the person, it's good for his neighbor. Okay, Kol Pkudei HaLeviim, now that he finishes this counting, so to speak, Asher Pakad Meisha Ve'arin Al Pi Hashem LeMishpachesam, and if you look in the Chumash, and also in the Sefer Torah, there's a few dots on the word Aaron. But in the Sefer Torah, there's dots on a few dots on the word Aaron. So Rashi says, why is there dots on the word Aaron? The Mefarshim explain. Rashi brings it down to tell us that Aaron was not counted in the Leviim. Obviously, Moshe was, but Aaron was not counted.
That's the reason that he's separated, huh?
Yeah, Aaron was different than everybody else, and therefore he wasn't counted at all.
Moshe was counted?
The Pashkas, he was counted because it does not Nukudas on him.
Pakat Moshe
of Aaron, but Aaron wasn't counted, but doesn't say. I mean, that's what the implication is. Because it says Aaron wasn't counted, but Moshe was.
Only Aaron
wasn't counted.
How they find out with the main Torah? Is not anything showing the main Torah?
Main Torah, there are dots.
There's dots?
Yeah. Next time this comes, ask to get an Aliyah. At this parasha, you look. No, in the Sefer Torah, there's a few places where there's Nekudas. So either Nekudah means to add or to take off. So here the Nekudah means to take off, that Aaron wasn't counted. Nekudah means something special about this word. So it's either to add or to deduct. So here it means to deduct that Aaron wasn't counted. It can't mean to teach us Aaron was counted, because if the Torah didn't write it, he would automatically be counted. By the way, he brings down over here, the Mamleis brings down, but this is really a Mishnah more about the base. This guarding of the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash, the Rambam writes, it's a Mishnah Midas, but they watched, there are 20 in the Beis HaMikdash, and the Mishkan was much smaller. But in the Beis HaMikdash, B'chav Dalet Mekrem, as the Mishnah says, 24 places, they watched the Beis HaMikdash every night. And it says, not because they were afraid of robbers or thieves, but God's palace, out of respect, you have a guard. So the Lekayanim watched in 3 places, and the Leviim watched in 21 places. And this is what it means, that everybody had to make sure they did their job. In fact, there's a very interesting Mishnah. I mean, the Mishnah in Midas, the Rambam brings it down also in Halacha, that there was a Kayan that was called, a Levi called Ish Harabayis. He was the man on Harabayis. He was in charge. He walked down a whole night around the Beis HaMikdash, all the 24 places that needed to be watched, to make sure that nobody fell asleep on the job. And if he would come and he thought the guy was sleeping, he would call out. And if the guy didn't answer him, so the Mishnah says, Niker Shuhu Yoshan, is noticeable that the guy was sleeping. But the Mishnah says he had permission to hit him with a stick, and even to burn his clothing. Not, God forbid, while it was on him. Mm-hmm. I mean, if he was like, put down his clothes to sleep with a pillow, whatever. He was allowed to hit him, and even burn his clothing. That he should learn not to sleep on the job.
Is any reason
for... Except a whole week, the guy went around with a torch. Shabbos, he wasn't allowed to. So Shabbos, he walked around without the torch. But
is there any reason by 24? There is no 24 gate. How come it's 24?
No. The Mishnah says exactly the Cheshbon. There are 4 on the 4 gates of Harabayis. 4 corners of Harabayis. And then there was in the Beis HaMikdash 4 places. And then inside of... The Mishnah over there, Midas, and the Rambam, he reckons out all the 24 places. But, yeah. Okay, he says, there are 5 gates in Harabayis. He brings it down over here, by the way. 5 on the 5 gates of Harabayis. 4 on the 4 corners of Harabayis. 4 on the 4 corners of the Azara. 5 on the 5 gates of the Azara. And then another 3 places. Karbon, Elishchus, Akarbon, Elishchus, Aperechus, and behind the Perechus. So there are 24 places where they actually watched. Okay. So it says everybody was counted. Now, Rashi over here asks, Shnai v'esir molef. Okay, the Pasuk says there are 22,000. Okay, the end of Pasuk, Lamites, right?
Yeah.
How many were all the Levium put together? 22,000. So everybody asks the question. Rashi says, if you count them, you find there are 22,300. Why does the Pasuk say there are 22,000? If you add them all 3 families together, it was 22,300. So,
300.
What happened to the 300? Why under the Torah mention them? So he said like this, because coming up in the next pasuk, the 22,000 correspond, the 22,000 Levim correspond with the 22,000 firstborns of the rest of Klal Yisrael. How many firstborns did the Jewish people have at this time? 22,000. The Levium took the place of the firstborn. So 22,000 Levium redeemed the 22,000 firstborn. But there's another 300. So Rashi says from the Medrash that these 300 were firstborn Levium.
Belong to them.
So they had to redeem themselves. So therefore, they're not counted in the 22,000. Here we're counting, as the Pasuk says, in the coming up right away, in the next Pesukim. The Torah says the Levium are there instead of the firstborn. So 22,000 Levium were good for the 22,000 firstborn, but 300 were firstborn Levium themselves. They had to redeem themselves. But this is what Rashi says over here. The Rashi quotes in the Gemara in Bechelis. Okay, Yem Pasuk Mem. Hashem said to Moshe, now like this. Now I have another job. Count how many firstborn Jews there are from a month old. Okay? Now we know, under a month we've learned, there's no established life yet, therefore you don't do opinion of Ben until the 31st day. So Hashem says to Moshe, count all the firstborn males, v'sa'es mispashmeisam, and take a census of their names. We need to know the names of all the firstborns. Then, you'll take the Levium for me, I am Hashem. Tachas kol b'chor b'vnei Yisrael, instead of all the firstborn Jews. In other words, the Levium redeemed the firstborn Jews. Veiz behemes ha-Levium, and the animals of the Levium should be tachas kol b'chor behemes b'nei Yisrael, instead of the firstborn animals of the Jew. Okay? So he says an interesting thing. Vayivkei Meshe kasher tziv Hashem Eisei. Meshe counted like Hashem told him to do, as kol b'chor b'nei Yisrael. And it's very interesting. Vayihi kol b'chor zocher b'mispa shemes. How many firstborn were there? Mi ben chedesh v'maylu levkudehem. So the Torah says like this. Shnayim v'esrim elef,
273.
Okay? So there's still, it's very weird. The 300 Levium, we're not even talking about. They had to redeem themselves. There are 22,000 Levium, and there are 22,273 firstborn. So now we have a problem. The next parasha is going to continue. We have a problem. Hashem says, okay, each Levi redeems a firstborn. But there's an extra 273 firstborns. So they need to be redeemed for 5 shekel. Those need opinion aben. Okay, those 273 firstborns, they have to cough up 5 shekel. So the problem is, everyone's going to come and say, hey, why do I have to pay the money? Why can't the Levi do it for me? Right? 22,000 Levi canceled out the Bchor. There's 273 extra. So those, the next Pasuk is going to say, you have to redeem them. So everybody will say, what do you mean? Why me? Let this guy Levi redeem me and let somebody else pay the 5 shekel. My typical Jewish thing. Why should I pay? Let somebody else pay. Jews are very good at that. So you know what they actually write? The next psukim we're going to say, Moshe Rabbeinu wrote, and that's why he needed the names. He put the names, they actually cast lots. They cast 22,000 lots. Okay? Avi Bukhar, they had the names. Okay, that's what he said, you need the name. What do you need the names of the firstborn for? So I'm going to put the name, like Rashi says. So he said like this, he brought, Rashi says later, 22,000 And on that it says B'nai Levi. 273 other things, it says Chamisha Shkolim. So they picked a bunch of cast lots. You pick the name, and if it picked the other paper, Chamesh Shkolim, then you have to pay the $5. It was God decided, nobody else decided.
And what if that person was a baby Levi? Baby Levi had nobody to pay.
So the father had to pay.
The father?
Yeah. Why is the pigeon today? But I mention one thing while we're on it. Lottery, according to Torah, the only valid lottery in Torah is not a raffle. There's no such thing in Torah, in Halacha. I'm talking about you make a raffle today. But when the Torah speaks about lotteries, there was no such thing as only one paper. Like, pick out a 10 name, pick out, you know, you pick out your name. Any lottery, whether it was every morning, the Kayanim in the Beis HaMikdash, cast lots, who does what job? Does it do 25 jobs, 25 Kayanim? Okay? So each lottery, according to Torah law, had to have two papers. Okay? One, the name, and one, the job. Or in this case, you couldn't just say, okay, you know what? Put all the names together and let the Levium pick out, you know, which ones, and the ones that pick it out have to be, no, it doesn't work like that. A lottery in Torah needs a double thing. The name, Zocha or Loi Zocha. That's, so you want to make a halachic lottery, yeah? And you want to give a prize. So see, 10 people are making a lottery, and there's one prize. So you're not allowed to just put 10 names in a hat and pick out one name and he's the winner. You have to put 10 names in a hat, so to speak, and another 10 pieces of paper. Nine will say Lo Zocha, didn't win, and one says Zocha. And each one has to pick two. And then the one that gets the Zocha wins. That's a Torah lottery.
How about the goat for the Yom Kippur?
Also, the Gerdel Lecha L'Hashem and Gerdel Lecha L'Azazel, there were four papers. Yeah. What?
There were double the amount of. There weren't 273 five shekel papers in there.
No, there were. Rashi, we'll see it later because it's in Pasuk Nun. But over there, Rashi says, Ma'asa, what did he do? Meshe Rabbeinu said to Hashem, what do you want from me? Everybody's going to scream at me. You know, why should I be the one paying the money? So Hashem said like this, Hevi Shnayim ve'esmel of Piskin. 22,000 papers said Ben Levi. Umasayim v'shivim shleishim piskim said Chamesh Shkolim. Okay? And then they made the lottery that way.
It's 273 ticket. They
right.
Put it one place.
And 22,000. And this one picked. So whoever picked.
So one of them is not a stable. One of them 271.
So they didn't have to carry them. Put it down, and they picked one, and then you know who it was.
We learned that Levin replaced the Bechorim,
right,
the firstborn, because they sinned at the golden calf. But the golden calf hasn't happened yet.
Okay. So the truth is, I was going to just come to say that in the next minute. There's a Mefarshim ask, they ask a different question. If the whole purpose of the Levium redeeming the firstborn is because of the Egel, so why did the Levium firstborn need to be redeemed for themselves? Okay, if you learn that the Levium redeemed the firstborn because the firstborn sinned in the Egel, right? But the Levium didn't. So why did these 300 extra Levium need to be redeemed with the Chamesh Shkolim if they didn't sin in the Egel? Right? So Rashi learns, that's why it's explained, according to Rashi, the Levium here, okay, the firstborn is not because of the Egel yet. It's because when God killed the firstborn Egyptians, the firstborn Jews needed to be redeemed. Hashem knew that the firstborn are going to sin anyway. So Hashem made even now the Levim to redeem the firstborn. But the redemption of the firstborn is not because he sinned in the Egel. The redemption of the firstborn is because what happened in Egypt. That Hashem killed the Egyptian firstborns and saved the Jewish firstborns, even though they were both worshipping idols. So because of that, the Levim are redeeming the firstborn.
So this way they are redeeming integrity.
Right.
So later on...
Correct.
This situation is happening a year after we left Egypt, right?
Correct.
And you said B'chodesh HaSheni, so means Iyar, right? Nisan Iyar.
Right.
And when do we have the golden calf?
Before.
Yeah. So why is he saying exactly. Why?
Is not this is before golden
no.
calf?
No. His question is not the question that this guy asked. This Mefarish says, why did the Levim need to be redeemed if they didn't sin in the Egel? Okay? His question is a different question. Okay?
I thought he said, if the golden calf did not happen.
Right. But the truth is, you're right. The golden calf already by now happened.
The golden
calf happened.
Yeah.
89 days after the Jews left Egypt.
So 3 months.
3 months. After
89 days. To be exact, 89 days. The Jews left Egypt, right? They started counting the Omer. 49 days later, they got to Torah in Har Sinai. The 50th day. It was 90 days.
Whatever.
And then Moshe Rabbeinu went up the next to Har Sinai for 40 days. That's when they made the golden calf, right? So the golden calf happened 90 days after the Jews left Egypt. This is in the second year. This is a year and a month after Yetzias Mitzrayim.
So you already didn't make a sin.
They already sinned. But I'm saying the question was, why did the Levim need to be redeemed if they never sinned in the Egel? So the answer is, it's not because of the Egel. The Levim need because of the firstborn in Egypt. That's what the Rei Rashi learns. We're not done yet. Even in the next psukim, the money went to the Kohanim, not to the Levim. The money, the 5 shekels, went to the Kohanim, not to the Levim. Correct.
By a Levi.
Right. But if you pay the money, who gets the money? The Kohen.
We didn't have that many Kohanim.
Yeah, Aaron and his 2 sons.
They were rich.
So they were very rich.
Not only for 273.
No, they make, then, by the way, you know why?
22,000 people.
22,000 were redeemed by Nevi'im, so they didn't pay anything.
It's only 273.
273 times 5 shekels.
That's a lot of money.
1,000 shekels.
I don't know. And then
over 1,000. Why?
The shekel is a lot.
Not shekels, not the Israeli shekels of Mexico pesos.
No.
What do you think?
Silver shekel is a lot.
You're talking about 102 grams of silver. I'm saying it's 102 grams of silver. But there's a reason why the Torah says you have to redeem with 5 shekels, because Yosef was sold for 20 shekel. Not 20, Esrim Kesef. Okay? And there's 4 kesef in a shekel. So the amount that Yosef was sold for when the brothers sold him to the Arabs then, you know, in Vayeshev, was 5 shekels worth. So because the brothers sold Yosef, to rectify that, Yosef was like Yaakov's Bukhar from Rachel. So to rectify the fact that they sold Yosef for 20 silver pieces, which is 5 shekel, everybody has to do it. But the interesting question is, by the way, that's one of the reasons why Levim don't have to do it. But Levi was involved in Yosef selling, right? And if anything, Reuven wasn't there. He went home to help his father, right? Binyamin wasn't there, because Binyamin was never left his father at that time. Yet they have to do it, but not, Levi has to redeem the, Levi doesn't have to redeem the firstborn, but they were part of the sale, and Reuven and Binyamin don't. So it's like, but the bottom line is, and the first one would say, that's why you have to sell it for 5 shekels. Because that's how much Yosef was sold. Okay. Now he says like this. V'idabar Hashem v'meshalim v'pasik mem dalet. Kachas ha-Leviyim, tachas kol b'chor b'nei Yisrael. Take the Leviyim instead of the firstborn of the Yidin. V'ezbemes ha-Leviyim tachas behemtam, and the animals of the Leviyim instead of the animals of the Jews. V'hoyu li ha-Leviyim ani Hashem, and Hashem says, I am... They should all be for me. Okay?
I have a question.
What?
When do sacrifice, you don't get the Bachor to sacrifice, the animal Bachor. How you do sacrifice? They used to do that. Because they say you have to get Bachor, animal Bachor.
No, Rashi quotes here from the Gemara, the only things the Levim had to redeem of the animals, because the animals were brought as a carbon.
So, yeah.
The firstborn animals, Pchor. Is brought as a carbon. So why did the Levim have to redeem them? So Rashi says from the Gemara that they redeemed the firstborn donkeys that have to be redeemed for a sheep. We read in last week's Parsha, yeah. Right? At the end of Parsha's Bari. That you have a Peter Rechem Lashem, but you have to redeem it. Peter Chamer, Tifteh Biseh. Firstborn donkey, you redeem with the sheep. But the sheep was not brought as a carbon. Okay? So this is what the animals of the Levium needed to redeem, was that sheep that was brought as a firstborn instead of the firstborn donkey. And as Rashi says, Allah was, that one animal of the Levium could redeem many animals of the Levium. One animal was able to redeem a lot of animals for the Levium.
Not supposed to be Bachor?
Not supposed to what?
Bachor. Animal Bachor.
He had to bring as a carbon. That applies even today.
They replace it. They don't replace it anymore.
No. You have to bring that as a carbon. You can't, unless it has a mum. This then applies even today. Huh?
The first lamb. Yeah, you have a lamb. You have sheep,
lamb. Even outside of Eretz Yisrael. We learned that in the Gemara. Right? We just learned that in the Gemara. Shit Tuesday night.
So first baby lamb. Today, what in America, what do you do with him? It, whatever.
They just did in the Catskills a few months ago. It was in the summer. Before Tishrei. There was a Petach Hamer. They actually did.
Even
in the Klaisenberger camp. Listen, in the Klaisenberger camp in New York, in the Catskills, there was a Frum farmer that had a firstborn donkey. And you saw the video, yeah?
Right.
It was unbelievable.
Right.
The Klaisenberger Beis Medrash, they thousands and thousands. This is a sight you never see. A sight you never see. To have a pet, the din of a firstborn animal and a petach hamer applies in Eretz Yisrael and outside of Eretz Yisrael. The problem is, what do you do with the animal? So if it's a goyish farmer, it doesn't matter, right? Because he's a goy. I mean, he's not obligated to mitzvahs. What they do in Eretz Yisrael, which is a big, big halachic debate, that Rebbe in the back of Shulchan Aruch doesn't like the mechira of, what they, a lot of times what they do in Eretz Yisrael, I don't know what they, if everybody holds of in Eretz Yisrael, what they do, when a farmer, a Jewish farmer, knows that his animal is giving birth to a firstborn, what many of them do is, they sell it to a guy. Like chametz, you know,
yeah,
sell it to the guy, then the guy, the animal is born in the guy's possession. So then it's the guy's firstborn. And then you buy it back from the guy. Now, the Rebbe doesn't like that hetter, whatever. But that's what they do. Or, you have to let it graze. You can't use it as a din of kedusha. It has a din of kedusha of abchor. You have to let it graze until it gets a blemish. Once it gets a blemish, it's not fit for an animal anymore. So for a carbon, I mean, then you can do with it, whatever.
How about
you
the bird?
So what they do is, which is not correct, they'll put it in a very small pen with a bunch of barbed wire. That the animal should get cut all over the place. I mean, my thing is, this is what I was told. I'm not a farmer and I'm not in there to throw.
Huh?
Scratch is not a mum, but it causes things or whatever to... But this belongs in... But how many Jewish farmers do you have outside of America that raise animals? I mean, it's only kosher animals, by the way. And even from the non-kosher animals, it's only a chamor that you have to redeem for a sheep. But how many way do we have in America Jewish farmers? But if you have a Jewish farmer that has a firstborn, it's not going to have a problem with it.
So this firstborn is Kedusha?
And you have to yet actually to save. You have to let it to graze until either it dies or gets a mum.
What if you're not a farmer and you just happen to have a couple of donkeys?
I hope not in Beverly Hills.
Rabbi Rattle. Rabbi Rattle might have in his backyard.
Yeah, maybe.
Rabbi Rattle, he likes to expose the boys from the cheder to like different animals.
So he has in his backyard?
He's well known for having all kinds of things in his backyard.
First one is only with the behemoth.
Right? What?
First born
no, no, no. Chickens, eggs, no. The firstborn eggs don't. No, it's firstborn
animal.
Kosher animals. So we don't have cows, and I mean sheep, I mean goats. I mean, how many do you have already? And how many?
So again, the mitzvah is that if it's a firstborn animal, then what are you supposed to do according to the Torah with it?
It has to graze until it develops a mum, a blemish.
I'm saying if it doesn't have a mum, then what are you supposed
nothing,
to do?
Nothing, just let it graze. You can't do anything. You can't work with it.
What was supposed to be? It was supposed to be a
carbon. Years ago, in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, she brought it as a carbon.
As a carbon.
Sure.
Yes, we can't, you just...
Let's, until it gets a blemish. But it's only, you can't sell it. You can't use it.
I see.
You
sell it to India.
This is not saying kosher animal. They say men and women should kosher animal.
Yeah, but it's a dinner. This is only kosher animals.
I would say donkey.
And you
about donkey?
Only a donkey's exception. The Torah says, Petach Hamart, if
that is said. And
you could milk it?
Huh?
You need to milk it, you could milk it, you should not milk it.
I don't know, you have to look up in Bukhairis, in the Mishnah over there, in the Gemara in Bukhairis, it talks about what the older dinim. It's in Shechon Aruch also, by the way.
You cannot use the
milk.
I don't know.
Probably not. It's Hekdish. You have to milk it anyway because the animal's in pain. So like in Shabbos, if you own a farm and you own cows, okay, you're allowed to milk the cows on Shabbos because otherwise it's painful, but the milk has to go to waste. You can't use the milk.
Going, can't use it.
Nope.
Just like the tree.
Or like a nothing. I'm not comparing a woman to a cow, God forbid. But a woman, if a woman needs to express milk on Shabbos, so to nurse the baby directly, obviously you're allowed to. But if a woman is, let's say, engorged or whatever, and she needs to express milk on Shabbos, the din is because of pain, you're allowed to do it. But the milk has to go to waste. So what some people even do, they'll put dirt in the actual container that the milk is going into to ruin it right away. Some people think you could just throw out the milk. Because the truth is, milking a cow, again, I hate saying a cow and a woman, but the bottom line is, in this din, it's the same, basically. One of the lamitas melachis is dosh, is threshing. Why can't you squeeze an orange to get juice out of an orange on Shabbos? It's a toldav dosh, which is threshing. Threshing is you take out what's inside the shaft, you take it out. So anytime you squeeze liquid out of a place it's concealed in, right, you're not allowed to. Schita is a toldav dosh.
You can do it over the food that you're using.
Yeah, because then it's not liquid. That's a different thing. Yeah, if you milk a cow straight over the food, you can do it.
Into the milk. Into the coffee.
That would be interesting. Sugar.
No ideas here, please. Shabbos morning, it's all I need here. Bring a cow. No, so it says, because, but otherwise, so if you're feeding a baby, and the baby is eating directly, so that you're allowed to. But just to express milk, or for that matter, milking a cow, so you're allowed to do it because otherwise it's pain. So because it's Tzar Balei Chaim, it's permitted. But you can't use it because you can't benefit from what you're doing in Shabbos. So therefore, but... how do we get it?
I don't know. It was about the firstborn.
Okay, whatever. I don't know how we got into it, but anyway.
That's interesting. Okay,
no. Okay, so here's something like this. V'yim tachs kochar v'nei yisol. Take the Levim instead of the firstborn Jews. The Levim are mine. Now, like we said before, the extra redemption of the 273 of the firstborn, Because remember, there's 22,000 Levim, and this is 22,273. So what do you do with those extra? They don't have any redemption. So then you need to take 5 shekels per head. And here the Torah is emphasizing again, the Medrash says, because that's how much Yosef HaTzadik was sold for. Okay? 20 dinners is 5 shekel. And it has to be b'shekel HaKodesh. It was the, well, here he says, see notes to Exodus 30:13, and at the beginning of Kisisa, here. Shekel HaKedish. Here he says, shekel is a specific weight of silver that Moshe instituted as a standard coinage. Okay? The verse goes on to specify that a full shekel was 20 gerah. A gerah was a coin in Talmudic Aramaic, was known as a ma. Now, in the time of Chumash, okay, the shekel of Torah was 13.33 grams. Then the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, it was increased to 24 gerah instead of 20. They made it from 20 gerah, they made it 24 gerah. So if you make a cheshbon according to the modern day things, if you have 5 shekels, and each shekel was that, so it comes out like 102 grams of silver. Some people make it more. The Chazon Ish is very big on it.
Huh? All these people that...
They had to pay.
And they were rich enough to pay.
All the Jews were rich.
They did their homework at night.
This is new money they make at Moshe for the...
I told you when the month fell, they fell with diamonds. The Medrash says that the Jew that left Egypt was either some... One opinion says 90 donkeys loaded with gold and silver. Another opinion says 10 donkeys, but it was even 10 donkeys loaded with gold and silver. I mean, they Jews had a lot of money.
You said they complained about it.
They complained then.
That's when they get the
all the money, nothing to buy.
No, they didn't complain about money. They complained, where's the beef?
Why would they, why did they have to pay? Why did those certain ones have to pay? You said?
Yeah.
Fetching.
But Moshe Rabbeinu knew who he was dealing with, and Moshe Rabbeinu said, what do you want me to do? So Hashem said, make a girdle, and they're going to have to pay. Now it says, V'nasata kesel Aaron ulvanov. Who gets the 5 shekels? Aaron and his children. Eight from Bohem. In other words, like this. And the Mepharshim say, that's why it says in the Pasuk before, a Pasuk Memhei, V'hoyu li alviyam ani Hashem. Hashem is telling Mesha like this. Because the Leviyam are mine, meaning they don't get land in Eretz Yisrael, they don't have work to do, therefore I am giving them the 24 matnas kahuna, so to speak, to reimburse them for the money that they don't make of owning land and all that. So Kayanim got all these 24 gifts, and Levim got a few gifts here and there. The Levim were broke, and the Kayanim were very wealthy, it says. Sure. Yeah? Kayanim?
And the
Levim only got to Maisa. What did the Levim get?
And the Levim had to do all the work also?
Yeah.
That's
kind of... But the job they do is...
I should complain. I'm going to go complain.
And they had to do it barefoot.
The Kohanim work barefoot.
Oh, the Kohanim work barefoot. I don't understand. You just said the Levim were broke?
The Kohanim were rich. In the Beis HaMikdash's time. The Kohanim got Truma. Then you give 10% to the Levi has to give 10% to the Kohanim. You shechted an animal, Zreel Chalhaim Akeva. You have a firstborn, the beginning of the shearings of the wool, Kayan. Truma, Kayan. Everything Kayan, everything Kayan.
You said everybody was rich.
No, I'm saying later on in the base of Migdash, not now. Yeah, they all had money. The question is, what does rich mean?
Well,
Asamech B'chalkei.
It's relative.
It's still
Mishnah says, you're happy with what you had.
But the Levim were very learned. They was always the world.
They were learning.
That's why they were poor.
In fact, they bring down, there's an interesting gemara in Bukhairis about what we just said. That somebody asked Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai, said like this, either Meshe Rabbeinu doesn't know how to add, or Meshe Rabbeinu was a ganef. This is the person who said to Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai. He said, because the cheshbon doesn't make sense. Like we said, if you add them all up, it's 20, the pasuk says 22,000. But it was really 22,300. So either Meshe Rabbeinu is stealing money, or he doesn't know how to count. So the explanation he gave, what we just said, came from that Gemara, that Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai said to him, these 300 were the VM, they had to redeem themselves, and they, so, you know, there was nowhere stealing. No, but, you know, there's a mitzvah in the Torah, V'yisim nekim Hashem Yisrael. When you do things, you need to be clean. We learned that halach in during the week. You need to do things that nobody can suspect you. What the Kohenim in the Beis Hamikdash went into the money containers, to, you know, to empty them out and to do it. The Gemara says they went in with pocketless coats. Because nobody should think, oh, he probably pocketed some of the money when nobody was looking. And the Gemara calls this supposed to be Yisim Nekiyim, not to be suspected by Jews or God. You have to do everything clean. So Meshe Rabbeinu, you know, did everything according to the book.